So appreciate y'all coming today. My name is Joe Speed. So a while ago, Thiago had asked me to come present on some of the work that I was doing around Tizen and Internet of Things in the automotive space. So working with a number of automakers. What's happened since then, so that was, he asked in the capacity of, you know, at the time, I was leading Internet of Things for IBM, work with a number of automakers. But then the Linux Foundation made me an offer I couldn't refuse, and so now I'm at Linux Foundation. And so very excited to be here and be part of your community, so thank you for that. Going to talk about a couple things today. Linux Foundation, obviously you know who you are, you probably wouldn't be here. And in terms of the mission, right, spreading the DNA, the collaborative DNA of Linux, so that collaborative aspect to other industries. And then my little twist on that would be, and connect all the things. So I'm very passionate about this whole Internet of Things space. So within Linux Foundation, we have these various collaborative projects. And when you start talking about the intersection of Internet of, when you start talking about Internet of Things, you know, these are some that I think there's a natural affinity for. And we'll talk a little bit about that, as well as some of the things that I've already been doing around Tizen in the automotive space. Okay. So in Internet of Things, you'll have some folks that to them Internet of Things is all about, you know, I manufacture these things and all these things talk back to the cloud and I use that to do predictive maintenance or whatever. And you have others that look at it and say, you know, they think of it just in terms of proximal, like peer-to-peer. And it turns out that for Internet of Things, you really need to be able to do both. And so I'm going to talk a bit about both aspects of that. So one of the collab projects at Linux Foundation is this All Seen Alliance. So its mission is around accelerating the development and evolution of interoperable Internet of Things. Okay? And they use the All Join open source as a starting point, but a lot of other companies have joined that collaborative project and are doing contributions and doing things. So for example, the original contribution to this project was all around proximal IoT, so you, me, and the things in this room, and how do we interact? And now you have people like, for example, IBM is working right now and doing a contribution so that it's Internet of Things cloud enabling it so that, you know, you could have a single framework to do my proximal, but then also use that same framework to be able to connect out to the cloud to do predictive maintenance, big data, or interact with things remotely that are off-premise. So manufacturers having their own clouds is very useful, and this is the thing that I was working on, right? It's, you know, so, oh, you manufacture cars, you make appliances, you make this, that, and the other things, we'll sell you a cloud, right? We'll give you a cloud, you can go connect all your products, so you can get all the data from all your products and do predictive maintenance and customer service and automatic reorder of water filters and things. So it's good for that. But when what you want is for your things to interact with your other things, the cloud doesn't work. It creates a problem because the clouds inherently don't talk to each other. They're using different technologies, different protocols, different security models. And you're also taking all this data to the cloud about your personal interactions that, you know, how many times did I flush the toilet today? I'm not sure I need that data going into someone's cloud. My wife says it's too many. But so really, clouds are a basket of remotes problem. I should have taken a picture of the whisker basket that we keep under our coffee table at home because it is a basket of remotes. And that's what you get with clouds. When everyone has their own cloud, how are you going to get them to work together? How are you going to get them to control it? Okay. And so if you look at the objective of what Linux Foundation's All Seen Alliance is doing, this open collab, it's about how do you do discovery, security, peer-to-peer communications, and be able to give control of the data back to the consumer. So this notion of having a gateway where the gateway shows me, here are the things I see in your home. And of these things in your home, these products are asking for access to these services on various manufacturer clouds. Do you want to authorize that? Do you want to approve it? Yes or no? So think about like in your settings tab, when you go control your notification, location-based services, and you're like, Yes, yes, no, 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 yes, right? That's the way to think of it. And I think it's a really powerful way of being able to have your pie and eat it, cake and eat it too, of being able to have the useful proximal, of being able to have those additional value-add services, the content and customer service and other things in the cloud, but without sharing more data than you have to and keeping some of the control in the consumer's hands. So the thing that All Signal Alliance is all about, you know, discovery, deal with different transports, so give a simple developer API and not have them to be worried about under the covers is that Wi-Fi, BTLE, Zigbee, don't know, don't care. I just look at my API that tells me these are the things I see in your neighborhood and these are the services that they are publishing. So that one's a light, that one's a dishwasher, this one's a thermostat. So letting things work together and get off stage a little bit here. So if you have all these things, you know, and they're using different ways to communicate, you know, with these kinds of open source projects, you know, that's a way to kind of rationalize this, right? So they can say, you know, these are the kinds of services that I use. These are the kinds of things that I expose. And they can sort out how to work with one another. And obviously there's people in the mix, but this creates an environment where the things can interact with each other and do useful things. So when the fire alarm goes off, the lights blink, right? You know, and there's a lot of use cases, but we're going to be short on time because I'm going to show you car stuff too. So in terms of like services notifications, so you got a notification, you publish it to your TV, right? Control panel, so being able to have apps or other devices be able to interact and control other apps. So maybe you have a clock and you want the clock to, you know, if I in my bedroom clock, if I change the wake up time, it informs the coffee maker, right? That's kind of the standard case people talk about. In terms of framework, and there's ton of detail on the collab site, there's some pretty good WebEx recordings, right, of deep dive technical stuff for developers. But way to think of it, you have this applications layer where you develop, you have the services that are exposed, and there are new work groups, new services being added all the time. So there's a lighting service work group that's in progress, and there are several others. There's the router node and the client. They call it thin client, but it's a misnomer. It's a node, so it's a standalone node, and it's very compact. So think 26 kilobytes on an embedded system. So in providing all of this, you know, all of these services around the discovery, the security, and so forth. And then it's abstracted out from the physical layer in terms of what's happening over there. So these are some people working on that. So we've got some 40-odd that are public. There's a press release going out next week about a whole nother batch of manufacturers and companies that have joined this. We also have IBM has been working on doing some contribution of some open source cloud technology there that I'll talk about. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they come into the mix as well. And so forth. Yeah, cars. So one of the reasons I think this is interesting is, you know, when I was doing all this car stuff, it was all about the cloud, right? So the car talks to the cloud. You have a lot of cars. They all talk to cloud. But when it arrives at the home, okay, that doesn't quite work. What I need is I need the car and the home to recognize each other so that the garage door opens, security goes off, the lights go on, all the TVs in the house get a notification, say, hey, kids, daddy's home, right? So those are things there. And so, you know, this is what really helps me understand that the cloud is not enough. But that said, the cloud is important. So when you look at the state of affairs in connected car, okay, if you have a current Mercedes-Benz product and use the Verizon Telematics provided mobile app, Daimler app, for remote controlling your car, if you say, find my car, it's 120 seconds. You say, unlock the doors, it's 60 seconds. So that's 3 minutes while your car is pondering your request to tell you where it is and let you in out of the rain, okay? It's not really acceptable from a current, you know, the expectations of consumers, of people that have been raised on 4G, LTE, smartphones, and tablets, okay? And it's a data distraction issue. So if I click buttons, if I do things in the car, and it takes tens of seconds or minutes for responses to come back and things to happen, that's a driver distraction issue. People get injured from that. Okay? And the car is a big data problem. So if you take a two-year-old Toyota product, and you put a recorder on the CAN bus, you drive it around the English countryside for 90 minutes, you get 2 gigabytes of sensor data. If you take like a 2014 Honda product and you do the same thing, drive it for an hour, you get 5 gigabytes of sensor data. And this data is valuable. So this is what allows them to look and see, you know, parts are going to fail, get them in for service before it fails. It's the data that allows them to get much more granular and insightful around when there's a defect or an issue and doing recalls instead of just, you know, we don't know which parts are bad, so we're going to recall every Chevy manufactured between 2007 and 2012. Like, that's not very targeted. So it's very much a big data problem. So do the math on this, right? So back of the envelope math, car produces 5 gig an hour, 60 million cars manufactured a year. If they were driven 4 hours a day, it's 438 exabytes of data. RESTful HTTP is not how you do this, okay? So when you're talking about mobile networks, so HTTP was invented as a document retrieval protocol. It was not designed around reliable messaging, so there's no quality of service, there's no reliable messaging. It's heavy, so for it to put or get a 1 byte object, there's hundreds of bytes of overhead. Wasn't designed for wireless, and the overhead makes it quite slow in bandwidth constrained environments. And when you invent a product, when you have a sensor, when you have a device, and it's generating sensor data, it's not possible to know at the time of manufacturing who all of the recipients are ultimately going to be. Because between the time you manufacture and put something in market and people are using it, there are additional new applications. So you don't know which people, which system, which applications are going to ultimately need that piece of sensor data. And so HTTP doesn't give you a good way of doing data distribution, okay? So there's no one-to-many, many-to-many. And there's automakers that have tried to do things with this for connected car, and, you know, you have issues. Like, sometimes you just can't connect to the car, right? So one of the things that I was working on, I became quite infatuated with this obscure little machine-to-machine messaging protocol for industrial applications embedded systems that had been invented by a guy at Eurotech and Andy Stanford, Arlen Nipper and Andy Stanford Clark at IBM. And they had designed this to be very compact, you know, small footprint, low power use, low bandwidth use to give reliable communications on unreliable networks. Well, then we found out from Lucy Zhang at Facebook that Facebook had adopted this obscure little protocol as the basis for all of Facebook Messenger. So 100% of all the communications in Facebook Messenger is using this. So we're like, oh my God, you know, so if it's, why are they doing this? And it turns out they were looking for faster phone to phone, using less bandwidth, using less battery. So we did some benchmarking, and what did we find? We found that on an Android 3G, 93 times faster throughput than using HTTP, uses 170 times less battery to receive, 11 times less battery to send, and has 8 times less network overhead. And it has built-in quality of service, reliable messaging, and it has special things to enable it to work on wireless environments, like this thing called last will and testament, which is if something disconnects ungracefully, you know, you will have beforehand published a message saying, I'm going to send keep alives in this interval. If you don't get my keep alive, I want you to notify the following people, right, the following application. So that way you can know who's online, who's not. All right. So it's open standard, open source, very fast. And there's a new C client coming for it that's like 5 kilobytes. So, typical car architecture, any car people in the room? Yeah? Couple? Cool. So this is a next generation telematics platform. It's a reference architecture from BMW and Volvo's wireless car. And their idea was to create these separation, these abstractions of service layers. But what ends up happening is that if I need to, and this architecture was invented before this idea of I would have a smartphone and the smartphone would interact with the car. So the smartphone's not in the architecture. But if you wanted a mobile to interact with the car, it would have to go hop, 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 which makes it slow. You have each of these architectural components to develop and maintain. So if I want to change how the mobile and the car interact, I have to issue a change request to the guy who does the mobile app, this guy, this guy, this guy, and the one who does the development on the car system. And these are often different companies, right? So this would be like, oh, let's see, wireless car, Airbiquity, right? So now you're doing change requests to third parties just because to change something in the car. So you're talking about 4 months to get some basic change done. When you twist this around, you take the same architecture and you twist it to be pub-sub messaging based using MQTT or and the like. Back of the envelope, this is just anecdotal. These are not audited results, but what the companies I've worked with, so people like, you know, Sprint, Chrysler, and who's public? Peugeot, so Peugeot, Citroen is public, Continental AG, and if you spend 5 minutes on Google, you can probably figure out who a half dozen of the others are. What they tell me is 20 times faster user experience, 5 times faster development because it's simplified APIs and there are fewer architectural components, and it's much cheaper. It's cheaper for a bunch of reasons. The mobile network bandwidth, okay, so they're paying out less money to Verizon and Vodafone, AT&T. Of course, depends on the automaker. So some automakers look at that and say, oh, great, I can be cheap. You've got others that look at this and say, oh, you have an efficient way for getting sensor data from the car? I want it all. Like, they'll actually make the data charges go up higher, but they're going to get more value. They're going to get more information from the car. So you can do things like predictive maintenance. And for the automakers, this is a big one. And it is for a lot of other industries as well, right? So my Samsung fridge at home, right? You know, instead of me having to figure out it needs a new water filter and then tromping down to the store to try to find one and find out they're not in stock, wouldn't it be great if I was just as a customer with current on the service plan, it just showed up on my doorstep and I got an email notification saying, hey, we delivered a water filter for you, right? With the predictive maintenance, you know, it's important because you can reach out to a customer and say, we see that you have a part, we think it's going to fail in 200 hours, let's get you in for service. I have a service bay available Tuesday morning, is that good for you, 10 a.m.? If so, here's a 20% off coupon on this service call. So you've just done a couple things there. So one is you've kept high touch with the customer and, you know, really good brand equity because they see that you're doing things to make sure they're never ever broken down on the side of the road. You're getting them into an underutilized service bay on a slow day of the week, and you're ensuring that that service is done with genuine factory parts. Now, for those outside of automotive, you might not realize, with some automakers like Volkswagen in North America, it's a bit of handle and razor blades, okay? The car is almost like a lost leader. That's not where they make their profit. The profit comes out of the parts business. And if you can't get your customers going back into your service centers for parts, then that poses a risk to your business. Also, really interesting things going on around using the cloud for vehicular safety. And the NHTS guys, they poo-paw this. They say, you know, you can't do vehicle-to-vehicle safety unless it's 20 milliseconds. And, you know, last time I checked, people don't even respond that quickly. But so be it. But there's a lot of problems in the vehicular safety realm that are bigger than 20 milliseconds away, right? So, you know, this car, that car, the other car have ABS brake slip. Their temperature sensors say it's dropping below zero. Big data in the cloud can correlate that information in microseconds and determine that road segment is icy, and then publish notifications to calculate which cars are en route to intersect that road segment, and then publish notifications to those car systems. So that's some stuff that I've been working on with Continental AG and Peugeot and several others, but Conti and Peugeot are public. And I just thought it was, I teased the NHTSA guys about this. I had posed the question to them at Automotive Megatrends Update in Dearborn last year. Hey, could the cloud have a role in V2V? And they poo-paw. They say, oh, no, the cloud has no role. It's nothing to do with it. So a year later, I put this up. It's Angela Merkel, right, the German chancellor. And it's like, you know, Internet of Things, connected car stuff. And so it's moving fast. There's stuff happening there. So cars. So this was a fun project. Anyone here from Intel? Yeah, couple. Anyone seen this car? No? Oh man, I'm not tweeting enough. So Local Motors is this company. They do crowdsourced, open source design, but not of software. It's industrial manufacturing. So they do crowdsourced. It's like the Linux Foundation and the Tizen model of community-based collaboration, but it's all industrial design. So they design and small batch manufacture cars, motorcycles, things that roll. They have a new factory that was just built with General Electric. It's the new GE Appliances first build brand. So it's crowdsourced small batch manufacturing of home appliances. And so this car, it's a 430 horsepower road legal desert racer. It's an open source car running open source electronics, so Intel Galileo and some other bits, with open source Tizen and Linux and Node-RED and MQTT connected to IBM's instance of the open source Cloud Foundry. So, and with that, we can, let's see if we can't do a demo. Oh, there we go. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, it's great. If I could remember which window I'm in. Okay, here we go. Okay, so my buddy Adam is live on the show floor at Telematics Update in Detroit. And so he's got the car there. Appreciate you staying there late past happy hour. And so we're using a FaceTime video here for this. And let me reload this. And okay. So what you see, we have this open source car running Tizen connected to the IBM cloud. I have an app. It's about 200 lines of HTML and JavaScript. And I'm going to remote control the car. So we can say headlights on. Okay. And so what you're seeing is it's going from this phone to IBM SoftLayer data center in Texas, which the car is also connected to subscribed. Okay? Now put the headlights on again. Okay? So that's going from here to Texas. The car's connected, subscribed. It goes to the car, turns it on, and then you're seeing it. The slowest part in all this is the video stream over Apple FaceTime. Okay? So, hazards, right? Yeah. Wipers, so we think that there's going to be rain, and I will click the button now, okay? And I can unlock the door, and it happens. It's really impressive when you're there live, because you click the button, it goes from here to the cloud to the car, and you hear the door lock click faster than you lift your finger off the button. It's very good. So, stupid pet tricks, right? Hazards. So one of the last things I did on my way out the door at IBM is we had worked on this a bit with Linux Foundation and the Tizen AGL folks. So we had help on this from Jim Bennett and Joffrey. I had done some earlier work with Matt Jones. So you all saw the Land Rover upstairs. Yeah. It's a much prettier sister, the supercharged F-Type running the same software, is at the IBM convention in Orlando this week. So my apologies that IBM robbed you of that car, yeah. So who here has a car with a mobile app remote? And so Rudy, what kind of response times do you typically experience?
It's about between 30 to 60 seconds.
30 to 60 seconds. I hear good things about Tesla, right, being much faster than others, but even that is slow in comparison to this, right? And perhaps not as reliable. So is this amusing? Is this, yeah? I like it to be helpful, or if not helpful, at least amusing. We can strive for amusing. Hey, Adam, let's see you. Okay. Oh, I don't know if you, he asked, how's it going? They said it's great, so they like it, Adam. Hey, thank you so much.
Yeah,
I'll let you get back to happy hour now.
All right.
Cheers, bye. Oh, I'll see you at the AT&T Hack Fest.
All right, sounds good.
Cheers. Bye. Okay, now back to our regularly scheduled program. We also had a picture of it. We're on its way to Michigan. They stopped at a restaurant called Twin Peaks, and they had the entire wait staff come out and sit on the car, but I wasn't sure that that's appropriate for this audience. So, AT&T Hackfest. We like AT&T. I've done a few Hackfests with them when I was at IBM. So they're doing one a couple days before CTIA, and this is a really interesting one. So this Hackfest revolves around the AT&T Digital Life, which is connected home, and AT&T Drive Studio, which is connected car. Okay. So I used to be doing work with the Drive Studio around the car cloud stuff, right? The All Scene Alliance, AT&T is a member of that, and so they've been working with the Alliance in that open source project. And I think the intent is that'll be the basis for how they do their connected homes. So what they're looking for is they want as many products as possible to recommend to AT&T customers that support this. So they're doing this. They've got a pretty big kitty in terms of over $40,000 in cash prizes, and we might get some other partners to chip into that before the event. The challenge is to build apps and things that create automated lifestyles at home, in the car, or both. So think about that interesting intersection points of the car and the home and how they might interact. Better than even odds, that car I just showed you is going to be parked in the middle of the hackathon floor. So it'll be there'll be the car, TVs, home appliances. We might be getting some home appliances from the new General Electric GE appliance joint venture, First Build. And we'll set up the hackathon around that so that you can either create mobile apps or things that interact with those. We're also talking about an option of a carry-in where if people want to get spun up and learn beforehand and get this all-seen IoT built into your ties and products and things or prototypes, you know, carry them in, compete for prizes, and then help mentor the other people in the Hackfest as well. And you can also come bringing nothing but your own skills, right? So they're going to provide Arduino Young, Embed, and you'll also be able to build mobile apps for Android, iOS, and if we can get a little ahead of the curve, Tizen as well, right? That would be an obvious thing. So the All-Scene Alliance, that open source project, which started Life as All Join, it's cross-platform, so it runs on ARM and Intel and whatever, runs on multiple OS. So, Tizen, OpenWRT, even things like WinCE and what have you, right? So very portable in that aspect. So I would really love to see you all there. And if you want more information, there's the link, or just follow up with me and I'll get it to you. And we'll be, this is basically nobody else knows about this yet, right? So I'm telling you guys now today, and it's going to start being marketed. That's my spiel, I guess. I'm an obsessive Twitter. Twitterer. My wife thinks it's a sickness. LinkedIn and All Scene Alliance website and Twitter handle as well. And So with that, questions, comments? Sure, Guy.
How do you see the role of Tizen? Covered has aspects of Tizen, but aspects of other things that you're working on with All Scene. So where do you see the intersection?
Sure. So my hope is that we figure out how to get these things to collaborate together. Okay? So I see it as a huge compliment. So Tizen absolutely is, the OS for everything, right? Everything from smartphone to $100,000 Jaguars. And scaling all the way from, quite small to quite powerful devices. And the Tizen, the way it's got it was the Tizen web runtime, now becoming Crosswalk, very strongly centered on this, HTML driving the user experience, that's a powerful thing. So like some of the prototyping work I did with another automaker around Tizen, we took the Tizen IVI UI and reworked it to connect to the cloud instead of local. And so we were able to like take the UI and run it remotely, brokered via the cloud to a car. No, so that was prototype, not contributed. You should talk with Matt Jones about things he's doing. Yeah, so that's Matt to talk about what Matt's doing. And then the Allscene Alliance. So you know, it's this small footprint framework, right? It's a little framework. It's a set of APIs, some abstraction layers. It's not an OS. It's a small thing. The thin version is 26 kilobytes. The full rich version, like you would put in a car or a more high-powered device, is like 78 kilobytes. Okay. And so Tizen, to me, would seem to be an obvious place to run it. You take it, you wire it in, do something like wire it into the crosswalk, okay, so that all of the APIs are exposed as JavaScript APIs. And now, and because it's wired in a crosswalk, you know, I know you could do this with the Tizen web runtime. I assume that you can also then get to all the, you know, Dbus, automotive message broker, you know, the other things that would be in like the Tizen IVI version. But I see it as hugely complementary. I would love to see these come together, and it's encourage you. You know, you can go to the Git, get the source, build it, bring it to Vegas, compete for cash prizes. And it's at the Cosmo. That's a nice hotel. Yeah, they're not doing this at like, you know, the Golden Nugget or something. Yes.
Are you associated with the two cars that are here?
So I worked on the, on the Corvette. I did work on the Land Rover on the previous version of the Tizen image that was in that. And we actually presented that at some shows. So I think IBM Pulse or Innovate, one of them. And then its sister car, the supercharged F-Type, is with Tizen and connected to cloud via MQTT, is at the IBM Innovate show in Orlando this week. So that's why Matt Jones couldn't be here.
Are those on the market
now? So those are engineering test mules. And so those are the cars that they use to prototype. And then they also use them for shows and events like this. But it's, you know, very much an indication, I would say, of, you know, I can't speak for their product plan, right? But the test mules are where they prototype and innovate for things that go into future products. Yeah, so when we were trying to figure out something to do around Internet of Things, these ladies that work at Local Motors came to see me at one of the shows, and they were like, well, you never heard of us, we're Local Motors. I'm like, Local Motors, oh my God, you know, crowdsourced, desert racer, 430 horsepower, like they didn't know what a gearhead I am. But this has been a lot of fun, and we're working on some other things. They're actually MakerBot, so Bree is on their board of directors, and they're working with Oak Ridge National Laboratory's MakerBot and Cincinnati Incorporated. Cincinnati builds like manufacturing tools and robots for the assembly line. So at IMTS in Chicago, at IMTS in Chicago in early September, they're 3D printing a urban electric car live on the show floor. So they're going to 3D print the body, the parts, assemble it, and drive it off the show floor. So I don't know how long it takes to print the entire car body as one piece, but the show's 3 days long, so it must be less than that. That's amazing. This 3D printer is like the size of a bedroom, okay? So, you know, typically you see 3D things printed the size of this, but they're already using 3D printed parts like in this car and in their motorcycles. And they have something else called the, last thing and then I'll get off the stage. So this is the funnest thing I've ever ridden.
Hey everybody, today's LM Lab.
So it's a man-sized big wheel with a 1,000-watt.
Is the latest and greatest.
It's a man-sized big wheel with a 1,000-watt electric motor in the front wheel and PVC tubes around the rear tire so they drift. And so this was started as a sport called drift trikes, and you downhill race them. They're gravity sports. And the guys at Locomotor said, well, yeah, but you know, I'm here in Chandler where it's flat, so what am I going to do? So they put a 1,000-watt motor in it in a big, huge battery pack, and they're just insanely fun. And they did a Kickstarter on this, and it like sold out in 48 hours. So they do big important stuff. They do military trucks for DARPA. They do, you know, home appliances with GE. But how fun is that, right? So, yeah, my wife won't let me buy one yet. All right. Any other questions? Yep. Well, sure. Rama.
Yes. So I've seen that automotive grade Linux, AGL, and we have Tizen there.
Sure.
And, I know you put all join in between them, but I haven't seen anything happening there. Do you see how all join can have, especially the automotive side of things?
Sure. So I think the use cases there will typically be around for AGL, the intersection points of the car and the home and the car and consumer electronics. So it's things like when the car approaches the home, have the car and the home and the things in the home recognize each other, okay, and do the security negotiation to have the security go off, the garage go up, the lights go on, and all the TVs get a notification saying daddy's home. So those are kind of the obvious use cases. There are certainly others that people will come up with, but that's the obvious ones there. Yeah. And there may be some other things around, you know, proximally, just like what can cars do. So one of the use cases is also via the cloud, your car can figure out, so I'm hungry, which restaurant's running special offers today? And then when I pull up into the drive-through, switch to proximal so that the drive-through menu is on my touchscreen and the drive-through attendant is coming over my car hand-free system. And you can do all of those things with AllJoin as well. Well, thank you very much, folks. I appreciate it.